Hello and welcome to AWIN Talks, the monthly podcast for Global Affiliate Network, AWIN. My name's Kevin Edwards, standing in as host today as Rob's taking a few months off to learn how to be a new dad. But I'm not alone. In his place, I'm pleased to say we have Joelle joining us again and a new voice for the podcast this month, Jess, who also works alongside Joelle in the client partnerships team in the UK and also handles our agency relationships here at AWIN. So hi, both.
Hello.
How have your respective weeks been?
Yeah, mine's been great, thank you. I think I've mentioned already on the podcast that I'm expecting a baby in May. So the last week or so has been like full house decorations. So we started on a nursery and now pretty much painting every room in the house.
Have you been buying online or have you been queuing up to get into DIY stores?
Bit of both, actually. So I've been to B&Q a lot recently, but then all of the baby stuff has been online. Obviously, can't get to any stores to check out cots and things like that. So all of that's been online shopping.
Cool. I've been finding new places to go for walks because that's the main thing that we do with our lives now, isn't it? So we rescued a puppy at the start of the year, so she gives us a good reason to get out. Just been exploring really and trying to find some different places to get out of the house too. What about you, Kev?
Well, you're in Bristol, which is obviously pretty hilly. Are you in the hilly part of Bristol?
I've actually moved even further south to Devon now, so I'm on the coastline. I'm very jammy to be locked down by the sea.
Yeah, your Instagram's made me jealous every morning.
Have you moved for good then? Are you not heading back to Bristol?
Well, we're renting to trial it out just in case that commute is a bit much. But yeah, I'm planning to drive up and get the train. So shout out to all my train gin Bristol commuters from the affiliate industry. A bit awkward because most of them are web games. But
yeah,
but I'll still be doing that. So I cannot wait to get back in the office, actually, speaking about that and seeing everyone. Do you know, in this role, I've been in the office once.
Yeah, so you're probably crazy. Not alone. I mean, it's been a year, so there's probably been a lot of people, certainly in our industry, where there's a lot of people moving around.
Yeah.
But I am really excited for the office reopening, hopefully within the next couple of weeks. So who knows, maybe I'll be recording the next podcast in the office. Okay, so coming up in today's episode, we're going to be dedicating some time to discuss the 2021 edition of the AWIN report, which was released a few weeks ago. And over the next few podcasts, we'll be picking out some of the key themes featured in the report to talk more in more detail. And first up today, we'll be chatting about the concept of affiliate marketing as being a way for brands to outsource innovation. Before that, the UK's strategy director at AWIN, James Bentley, will be speaking to Alistair Lee from Tastecard, which is known for its popular food discount card, but had to kind of make some extreme decisions in 2020 by pivoting their business to adapt to obviously the shuttering of restaurants during lockdown. Before all of that though, Joelle and Jess, what's grabbed your attention in the world of digital and affiliate marketing this week?
So this month we kind of have to give the Unicode report a bit of a shout out. So they released their new annual report. And coming from my publisher background, it's been really refreshing to see discounting talked about in such a positive way, because sometimes it can get a bit of a bad rap. So that's been really exciting.
Jess, did you want to briefly explain who Unicode is and what they do?
Yeah, so Unicode help prevent sort of code leakage and supply unique codes, given the name, to publishers and advertisers, and kind of help with their marketing efforts and make sure it's all sort of tracked in a efficient way. And we recently looked at kind of some of the similar insights that they talked about in the report, actually, in the Pulse newsletter. So one of the headlines, if you haven't downloaded the report, it's really, really good to go and do that. But the first page is really informative and gives like a nice summary. But it reflects on kind of something that's jumped out for us as well and caught our attention on the network is the times that people are shopping. So the kind of patterns of sales and how that's really shifted with the pandemic. So the kind of key set in there is that 8 p.m. has remained consistent across the last 5 years, but daily promotional performance has shifted kind of with Tuesday being the biggest day redemption. So that's quite an odd day to be kind of a peak there, but they found instead of kind of the commuter peaks, when we looked into this, there's a more flatter trend, and it it's looking that it's more people buying throughout the day and not being limited to like when they're on the train or kind of outside of working hours. So it's quite a nice story, actually, that people are able to shop and they're not feeling so rushed and pressured and things. They probably do a bit more research as well. So good for our contents kind of publishers that we work with. And then the other section is kind of around the closed loop publisher and the employee benefits portals that have really seen a bit of a rise, and being able to use Unicodo tech to make sure those codes are unique and getting out to all those people has meant that they've surpassed their previous year's performance. So we've also felt this across the network. And I know from engaging from a lot of our agency partners that there was a bit of a rush on working with those blue card publishers. So it's been really nice to see everyone wanting to reward our key workers in that way and kind of doing it in a digital affiliate surrounding. So yeah, it's been really interesting, and I think everyone should go and give it a read and kind of get to grips with their tech and what it can add to what they're doing, really.
I get the sense that we're not really hearing much about voucher codes at the moment. I don't know whether that is related to the fact that, you know, there's a huge surge, obviously, there's been a huge surge in online retail, so perhaps retailers are less dependent on coding or discounting. Do you get any kind of sense from your conversations with agencies or Joelle with brands about sort of where they are, where their heads are with voucher code strategies at the moment?
Yeah, definitely from my side with agencies, it's kind of coming up less and less in conversation. So it's something we want to kind of get back to the forefront of people's minds, I think, and using that as a means of conversion. So yeah, it's interesting you point that out because I kind of hadn't really thought about it, but I think it's something that's probably been noticed. What about you, Joelle? Have you noticed it with advertisers?
Yeah, probably the same as you, actually. Yeah, I think obviously we know last year the whole shopping landscape pretty much moved online. So the voucher code strategy was already a pretty big part of that picture. And I think it's only going to continue.
Mm. Yeah, maybe it's that they've kind of become so ingrained into everything that advertisers do. It's like we're not hearing about it so much because it's the normal. It's like
BAU. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think, you know, we talked about, already mentioned Unicodo. There's clearly has been a push towards more control over codes, and I think that was always the biggest fear from a brand perspective about the lack of control that you have about, you know, where your codes are appearing and who's promoting them and how you control that margin. And I think that whilst those fears are still there and that does still happen to a degree, I think that some of those issues have been addressed. Okay, so what we'll do is we will make the link available for the Unicodo report in the show notes so that you can go and check out all of their information in greater detail at your leisure after the podcast. So, Joelle, coming on to you, what have you been reading about recently?
So I wanted to showcase the Brand Watch report. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They can be a paid service, but they offer a load of free content, and they're effectively a digital consumer intelligence platform. So they search trends by analysing data, analysing conversations, looking at social channels, and through customer surveys as well. So there's like millions of touch points in there. And they've started to release some really nice trend reports. So in the last 7 days, there's been two. One was on spending habits. So there were some really interesting things in here. I mean, naturally a reduced amount of spend on social activity because we haven't been able to go out. So they're looking at like this Christmas period versus last Christmas period. Then increased amount of interest or conversation online around insurance. So health came out number one, then home insurance, and then pet insurance. So I think like Jess, we've seen a massive pet boom this year, and car insurance was at the bottom of the pile. The other trends we saw in the spend report were things like buy now, pay later, which again, Awin's definitely seen in terms of the rise of more options than ever for different payment options. And there was one trend in there I was quite surprised to see, and it was a reduction in conversation online around saving, and specifically personal savings for your own business, which I was quite surprised at because obviously we've entered that entrepreneur market through Awin Access, and we're really seeing that support small and support local movement do really well in our channel. So it was quite interesting to see that from a consumer perspective, they're seeing less people talk about personal savings for your own business. And the second report they produced was more around retail predictions. And again, we've looked at this at Awin this year, so I was more having a nose to see how they aligned. in there, they actually did mention the support small and support local trends and also support Black-owned businesses. So that was really great to see. That conversation's just boomed in the last year and that momentum seems to be carried and we're expecting it to carry forward, which is great. Other trends were, I mean, delivery as a whole was like a huge consumer conversation in terms of retail, but then more digitally conversations around how we enhance that shopping journey, which consumers are talking about, which is exciting because usually it's us talking about it from the marketeer's perspective. But I suppose things like virtually trying items on and touch-free payments as well. But those are just two reports they really produced this week. So, I mean, I could talk about what they produce for days, but the reports are really visual. It's really digestible, so it's definitely worth a sign up.
The touch-free payment stuff, I think, is really interesting because speaking from a UK perspective, the Chancellor recently announced that the contactless is probably going to go up to £100 from its current £45 amount, which also, if you think about how effectively cashless we've become as a society in the last year, I mean, it was very much on that trajectory anyway, but no one is really using money anymore. And I just wonder how that's going to drive the conversation around how brands can start to realise that actually I can track my consumers across all of their purchases, across all stores. And I wonder how much that's going to kind of reinvigorate this conversation around online to in-store, which we kind of saw as being like a big topic maybe 10 years ago, but it never really sort of gained loads of momentum. And I wonder whether that will kind of now become a topic that people want to know about. And actually, nice segue into the Avon report, we do actually feature a case study about that with Fidel in the Avon report. Cool. From my side, just very briefly, I wanted to sort of flag up a study that we released last week. And I say we, it was released by the IAB, but with contributions from networks. And we effectively went out and we surveyed advertisers over a couple of months at Christmas and in January. And it was similar to a survey run by the Australian IAB, which they've run it for a few years now. And I spoke to the team there about whether we could run a similar set of questions such as on topics from tracking to preferred publisher and payment models to how the pandemic has impacted their businesses. We had about 200 responses, not a huge data set, but it's good enough for us to be able to draw conclusions from. If you want to read that report in full, if you go to the IAB website and search for affiliate marketing, you should be able to find a free download for that. But just a couple of points that I thought were really interesting. One was around tracking. I mentioned that we asked in the survey, how do you track your programs? And actually one in five people we surveyed didn't know. They didn't know whether it was third party, first party cookies, server to server, all the kind of different variations of it. And actually 50% claim that they are still reliant on third party cookies, which for me indicated that actually there's a big education piece that needs to happen there, because obviously tracking is a huge topic at the moment and with the kind of demise of third-party cookies.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if those answering the survey right now weren't involved in the initial integration, because that's really when we start talking about tracking, when we start working with a brand and we set up the account, and then it can almost sometimes be a bit of a lost topic. But this year and last year, more than ever, we need to be revisiting the tracking landscape that we have on all programs at the moment and making sure that we're future-proofing them as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that very often, you know, our contacts might be non-technical. You know, it's like our integration team will be dealing with their integration team, and very often those conversations happen in parallel, but not necessarily together. Yeah. So I think that may be, might lead to some of the confusion, but also indicates about how we have to get the messaging needs to be really clear, non-technical. So there's work to be done on that. And hopefully from an industry point of view, we're working on a kind of a consensus piece amongst from Awin and from other networks as well. So kind of watch this space. We're bound to kind of come back to that subject. I won't go through a lot of the other data that's in the survey because there's tons of it. And I would just encourage you to go and download that from the IAB's website. It's a free download. You don't need to be a member to download that information. Okay, so thanks both. If you want to read more about the surveys, the results of that survey, go to the IAB website. There's also Performance In, a piece on performanceinn.com, which I wrote, which again looks at some of the insights from that study. So on to our interview now with Tastecard. So occasionally a case study comes along that makes you kind of sit up and really challenges your convention. They sort of are fairly few and far between, but when they do come along, they're really useful and important case studies. And that's what happened last year when we were considering entries for the International Performance Marketing Awards. So this entry was originally planned for a different category, but the work that Tastecard did in terms of pivoting their business to include a publisher model in 2020 seemed a perfect fit for that best partnership category. And I think that it underpins how flexible and adaptable the affiliate model can be. So without further ado, I'm now going to hand over to our strategy director, James Bentley, who caught up with Alistair Lee from Tastecard earlier this year to find out more.
Tastecard are a leading brand in the food and hospitality sector. Responding to national lockdowns across the UK and Ireland in 2020, they embarked on a path of creative business adaptation, delivering not only commercial success, but also widespread industry recognition in the form of an International Performance Marketing Award. Today, we're joined by Alistair Lee, the Affiliate and Partnerships Manager at Tastecard, to learn more about their inspiring story of adaptation. Alistair, lovely to meet you today. Do you want to maybe start off by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself and your role at Tastecard?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much for having me today. My role at Tastecard is, like you've mentioned, I'm the Affiliates Partnership Manager, and that consists of me working as on both the advertiser side and the publisher side. And I guess day to day on the advertiser side, I try and find brands who can go out there and promote Tastecard to their members so that we can drive new acquisition and signups. And from the publisher side, I'm looking for new partnerships where we can promote third-party offers to our members in order to add further value to their subscription and membership.
Excellent. And for those who may be unaware, can you tell us a little bit about Tastecard and the services it offers to its immediate customers?
Yeah, not a problem. So Tastecard was launched in 2006 and has predominantly always been best known for providing its members with 50% off food at thousands of UK restaurants, you know, with the likes of Frankie and Benny's, Pizza Express, Bella Italia, so large chains, but there's a hell of a lot of local independents in there as well. The brand has now developed and evolved, especially over the past 10 months, into a multi-discount product where we provide members with all sorts of discounts, whether that's 50% off pizza delivery. We've now launched a delivery and collection service, discounts off attractions, online movie streaming, member perks where members can even get discounts off things like retail and utilities. So it's all going on. And to put it as simply as possible, I guess Tastecard is in the business of saving our members money.
That's brilliant. And these are really interesting adaptations that Tastecard has been through, as you say, in the past 10 months or so. Can you tell us a little bit about the initial response within Tastecard to the restrictions that were introduced in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, when the restrictions came into place, you know, what a difficult time it's been for many businesses and sectors, especially, you know, those in the hospitality industry like Tastecard. I mean, for Tastecard, the response that we took to lockdown was that we needed to adapt, and we had to adapt fast. You know, the whole reason why Tastecard exists is to add value to our members when our core product, dining, you know, ceases to exist. You know, like I said, we knew we had to react fast and respond very quickly to what was happening. Fortunately, when it comes to Tastecard as a business, we're always forward thinking. So products like I mentioned before, like our delivery and collection service, our member perks, etc., they have been in the pipeline. So what we just had to do as a business and as a team was we just had to put a foot on the gas and bring these to market quicker. So really, it's a credit to the team that we were able to be so agile. It makes the business stronger as a whole. I was thinking about, actually, the other day, there's a famous saying that goes around, and it's something along the lines of, you have to go through the storm to get to the sun. And I feel like that fits Tastecard and a lot of other businesses, you know, out there very well at the moment. Due to pivoting the business and coming up with new products, etc., once we're out of this and we get back to normality and you look back at Tastecard and you realise all the new products that we have, we're a stronger business, we're a stronger unit. So it'll be very exciting once we're back to 100%.
I've read the IPMA award entry for Tasteguard, and I have to say it was such a fantastic story. Really, it was, and a real credit to the work that your teams have done, you know, working in partnership with AWIN, within your own organization, and with new external brands as well. And I think it's important not to underestimate the scale of transformation that Tasteguard accelerated during the past 10 months or so. These were big changes. Were there any reservations, do you think, to making these changes at any point?
I wouldn't necessarily say reservations, but I would say that we knew we had to adopt quickly. The only, if any, the only reservation was everything that we did or anything that we changed. We just had to keep on going back and asking ourselves, does this benefit the member and will this help them save money? Businesses, and especially Tasteguard, at that time during lockdown, we could be coming up with a million and one ideas on how to add further value to our member. But it's about making the right decision at the right time. And for us to make sure that that came across, you know, it was about looking at the stats very closely when we tested things, making sure that any new products were resonating well with our members. But like I said, as long as it helps them save money, then we were keen to explore the options of making it live.
And just recapping, what were those key adaptations for those Tasteguard audiences?
I guess the main adaptation is the fact that members couldn't go out and use the discounts in restaurants. And like I mentioned earlier, this has always been our core product and always been what Tasteguard has been best known for. So we are, in a certain respect, we are very lucky to have loyal customers who understand the value of Tasteguard and the fact that we will always be trying to help them save money. And, you know, they understood that with products like our pizza delivery, etc., where we worked with Pizza Hut and Domino's, where they can save 50% if they spend over £30, you know, there's a minimum saving there of £15. So it's a really strong offer to those members. But yeah, I think the biggest adaptation was the fact that members couldn't go out. And like I said, that's solely what they would use the Tasteguard for in the past. So it was just looking at the new products that we were presenting them and making sure that the value is there.
Yeah, and I thought it was a brilliant piece of reframing around that with in is the new out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Genius. Really, really smart. From our perspective, we saw just how much you leveraged the capabilities that are available within AWIN, you know, from a feature perspective, but also from the range of brands and publishers that we work with. We really saw you guys make great use of that in the past year or so. What were the key adaptations that Tasteguard made to its affiliate program during the past year, would you say?
I think we were testing a lot of new campaigns. I know you've mentioned there, you know, in is the new out, and that was up there with our most successful campaign. And, you know, we're testing all types of different messaging, etc., via our paid and social channel. So it was really, really about keeping a close eye on what was working and resonating with people, and then going out to push it to the affiliate channel. And obviously the affiliate channel it's been going for a number of years now, and we've got a lot of strong partnerships. So we work with the likes of Totem or Top Cashback, and it was just making sure that those partners who we know can drive significant signups for us, that they were well aware of what was working, what campaign was working, what messaging was working, and then they could also reflect that on their site and make sure that there was that synergy in the journey from clicking out from a partner site to landing on the Tasteguard page.
And was there a process of communicating and educating this new offering for affiliate partners?
Well, I'm going to have to give credit to AWIN here. I mean, we have a brilliant account manager, Molly Penzo, and she worked really, really closely with us. And any change in campaign or messaging, you know, she assisted myself and the rest of the team to go out and make sure that our partners were made aware. And we also, you know, did the standard things like updated our AWIN account. So we put new creative in the AWIN account so that it was easy for our partners to be able to just log on and grab the creative and do with it what they please.
One of the really interesting aspects of your story in the past year has been this journey within Tastecard from a pure advertiser-based approach to affiliate marketing to adopting this partner-based model. As you've moved into that, what would you say you look for when partnering with brands within Awin, and how have you found setting up these kinds of partnerships?
Yeah, so first of all, it's been really interesting to see and be heavily involved in Tastecard becoming a publisher as well as an advertiser. And from a member point of view, we've gone out to our members with surveys, etc., to see what kind of third-party offers they would like to receive. And, you know, this is a mixture of things from retail to mobiles to travel and so on. But for me, you know, the main thing that we look for in a partnership when being the publisher to bring a brand on board is, can this new brand or can this new partner add value to our members? And, you know, whether this is through an exclusive discount or a voucher, anything that has any form of member benefit is always brilliant to promote. As a publisher, we do appreciate that it's very difficult to just go out there, get a brand new partnership over the line and say, give us an exclusive. And, you know, if it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. So we do have flexibility, but at the end of the day, the long-term goal is we are a closed member group, so we want a member benefit.
And the work that you put in over the past year and this journey of adaptation and transformation, I've seen some of the numbers, but most of all, I also saw that fantastic win for Tastecard at the International Performance Marketing Awards. Could you tell us a little bit about the results you saw in 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, it was an honour to win the best partnership. And I know our CEO, Matt Turner, and the directors were all delighted to see this. And there was a lot of noise at the time going around the business with congratulations, emails and things like that. But in terms of results, through the affiliate channel after lockdown, when we launched the campaign you mentioned earlier, In is the new out, we saw a sales increase of 32% and a blended CPA drop of 43p, which was an unbelievable result. And that was the following month. So, you know, you're looking at April. But over the year, of course, just because of everything that's happened, we had to scale back on budgets. But I've got a stat here where we scaled back on budgets from prior year 57%, but we actually only saw a 6% year-on-year sales decrease, which again was absolutely fantastic to see, and it just shows the high performance that the affiliate channel did in 2020.
That's fantastic. And as now the flagship example of a brand moving to and adopting a publisher-based model, what would your advice or guidance be to, you know, other brands out there who might be considering a similar step and adopting a publisher model? Have you got any sort of words of wisdom? I'd say
at the beginning, you know, you've definitely got to make sure that your customers want to receive third-party offers. Tastecard, you know, we've always been a discount brand, so our members are discount savvy individuals who they're open to receive market leading deals, etc. But for other businesses, I appreciate that it might not be as straightforward as that. But I would say that if they can hit the nail on the head and get past that and make sure that they're sending the members the right products and offers, then from a partnership point of view, there's huge potential because it can create some really strong partnership. It can create some really strong reciprocal partnerships where there's more negotiations to be had. And what I mean when I say that is, a lot of the time your standard publisher partnership is just pay us tenancy and you'll receive X amount of exposure. But if you start as both an advertiser and a publisher, you can have those conversations where it's, okay, we can promote your brand, but you've got to promote Tastecard as well. So I think, you know, there's a lot more interesting conversations to be had. My words of wisdom would just be, you know, it all comes down to the customer at the end of the day. So just make sure that you are promoting things that your customer wants to see.
And I think the path to success ultimately has to be pursued through testing, right? There's so much that comes from trying things, learning, making iterative changes. Based on your experiences within the channel, what do you think makes affiliate marketing so effective as a route to testing and understanding the potential of new business ideas?
I think the affiliate channel offers so much diversification in audiences that you can test products or ideas with specific partners and see if it performs like expected. So, for instance, I mentioned before that we work a lot with student partners, and TasteCard has always resonated well with this audience. So when we first went live with a product like online movie streaming, you know, this is a great audience, and we know that for that product, it should work well. So it was a great way in order to kind of test the water, dip our toe in the water and promote to this audience first, just to check, you know, clicks, conversion rates, usage, etc., just to make sure that they were to the standard that we wanted it to be. And then any tweaks that we wanted to make, we could make, test, and then go out to other channels, you know, and then start implementing this strategy on paid and on social and through direct. So yeah, affiliates in that respect, you know, leaning on partnerships that you know are successful and you know work well. For me, it's a great way to test things.
It's been so insightful and so interesting talking to you today. On behalf of the whole of Awin, our sincerest thanks for finding the time to share your experiences over the past year. As I say, the story of TasteCard is just absolutely phenomenal. And we really appreciate all of the contributions you've made, both as an advertiser and in this new model of publisher. Our sincerest thanks to you, and yeah, congratulations for the successes of the past year.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Really excited to see where the Awin partnership can go in 2021, especially when we start to grow as a publisher. And like I said, it starts opening up those reciprocal partnerships. So yeah, thank you for your time, and it's been great to chat.
Brilliant.
So thanks to James and Alistair there. So if you want to read more about the case study at your leisure, then we published it on awin.com this week. And you can also go and listen to the audio interview again on the Awin report. So talking of the Awin report and case studies, there are something like 17 in the new report, which we launched about 3 weeks ago, which very neatly allows me to sort of sidestep to our final conversation for today's podcast about one of the themes featured in it. And it's the concept of outsourcing innovation. So, Joelle, if I come to you first, can you explain what we mean by outsourcing innovation?
I'd like to hope that I can explain it, because I actually presented this as part of my presentation at Madfest last week. So just last week, we were invited to the conference. The sessions were really short, so we had about a 6-minute session. So it was split between, ideally, I wanted to talk about the power of partnerships. So I covered the TasteCard case study, coincidentally, but also outsourcing innovation and specifically talk about Samsung increasingly. But I suppose outsourcing innovation for me is about the ability of allowing brands to test new opportunities, test new technologies, and be able to do that quickly. So hopefully through Awin, for our solutions marketplace, we can provide brands with a portfolio of handpicked technology partners, but also through the master tag, allow them to bypass any sort of technical integrations themselves, any sort of lengthy or costly build if there was something they wanted to do. So yeah, outsourcing innovation for me really is all about partnerships. The Samsung and increasingly case study is a really nice example. So Samsung wanted to increase their average order value. So they naturally handpicked increasingly who are a technology partner who work through the Awin master tag, but on your website, and help you personalize upsell to ultimately increase that basket overall spend.
It's really interesting. I was looking this morning, I was just searching for a couple of bits of research, and I saw something on LinkedIn which was flagging up a new event that's coming out, and they're also going to have 6-minute sessions, which your Madfest session was only 6 minutes, and there's obviously you've got to be really, really succinct and on message in order to kind of deliver the punch in 6 minutes. But what I thought was really interesting is they actually use as a trailer for why people should tune in this idea that, coming back to something that we've definitely seen, that brands need to be able to make decisions really quickly, and they need to potentially if they want a bit of tech built, if they want to do something innovative, then they don't, then they can outsource that. And the Philip Challenge is a perfect place to come. And I thought that that was potentially like a really good fit for the 6-minute presentation, because you're effectively saying to people, pitch to me for 6 minutes about why your tech could be great for me. And if you think about that, that could all be housed within one single tracking solution, like a master tag. And it is, literally becomes like a plug and play, switch it on, switch it off. I think that it's really interesting that how much this sort of marketplace approach that we're going for seems to be resonating with how brands now are feeling about needing to respond really quickly to changes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting how they've marketed their event. It's very clever to talk about those 6-minute pitch slots and the way in which the landscape's moving. But also, like, we've seen consumers hugely adapt to digital shopping. So we need to find technology partners to help us enhance. Brands as big as Samsung probably can't move as quickly as consumers in terms of their desire to want to be able to virtually play with things digitally, or just I suppose completely see that high street experience but replicate it on store and online.
Yeah. Jess, coming to you. So you I mentioned earlier that you kind of handle our agency relationships. So you're kind of coming at it from a slightly different angle. But is this landing with agencies? Are agencies kind of fully on board with this idea?
So to be honest, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. So there's been some agencies that are really up for getting this tech integrated in the kind of existing AIM and MasterTag, and can see how easy and efficient and fun that could be to do, to way to innovate. And then there's others that are kind of coming up against advertisers that are seeing this value that it's going outside of the affiliate channel. So then coming up against some of the challenges around that that could present if they only look after affiliates, for example, if it's an affiliate agency. So that's been really interesting. And where we have been able to overcome it, it's been really, really successful. And the good thing about partnering with our agencies and working so closely with them is that once that we can do that with one of their clients, it really kind of opens up a success story to run that across more of them. And a lot of them have a real diverse mix of sectors. So it's been really, really good working closely with them on this and getting that performance model out there by working with these tech partners. So I don't think they were openly sort of aware of it as advertisers that work with our agencies. So it's been nice for them to have something new to bring to them for the affiliate offering and the model as well. So it's been like really impressive to see some of the solutions and how they've gone into place and added that value across the advertiser e-commerce offering outside of affiliates. So yeah, I mean, it's been mixed, but we've got there and it's been really exciting to be a part of.
Yeah, I think that you raise a kind of, I mean, raise a couple of interesting points. One, obviously, is having the case studies. You need the success stories to really be able to bring it to life, especially when you can say, you know, Joe, you mentioned the Samsung case study. If you can go out and basically talk about this globally known brand that has done this piece of work with a publisher or a tech partner, which actually has then led to really significant uplifts for them, then that, you know, then that becomes a really desirable thing to, for people to potentially want to explore the options. You know, it's certainly obviously from an AIM perspective, something that we're really conscious of and we're investing quite heavily in. I think that where it potentially will grow and grow is we need kind of, if we can get 2 or 3, 4 more of those partners from different, doing different areas of sort of tech innovation, digital e-commerce innovation, and get those up and running and get like a full suite of those solutions, then you can really build a really compelling story, I think.
Yeah, I think it works really nicely as well, like Joelle said, about addressing those specific KPIs. So when there's a business need for it or challenge, and we can really support that. I mean, I got given a demo on SmarterClick and their sort of Intently vision, and some of the conversion specialist technology and the code usage kind of validity around it has really supported some of the challenges that like agencies have been facing, and whether partnering with code usage sites have got that incremental gain and addressing that kind of ongoing question mark. So it's really good when you've got that problem that you can solve it with these tech partners as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I guess for me, I think it's that diversity of options, isn't it? You know, it feels as though maybe 5 or 6 years ago, there wasn't that much innovation happening in the affiliate space, or it felt like we were having the same conversations about the same affiliates. But I think that now we're like a really growing, diverse set of options. And also we're transforming what the affiliate channel means, I think. It's not just about last click CPA anymore. It's about these tech partners that can play a role across the purchase cycle. And that enables us to kind of reposition the channel beyond just last click sales, I guess. Okay, well, we're pretty much up for time. So thank you both. If you want to read that section of the AIM report about outsourcing innovation, or indeed any of the other sections and country profiles, we have a country profile for each of the markets that we're active in, then you can find the report clearly signposted from the AIM.com homepage, and you'll be one of more than 11,000 unique visitors to the report since we launched it 3 weeks ago.
How proud are you of that?
That's so amazing.
Well, it was a new experiment for us. You know, it's a hub. It's an online hub, and there's no kind of download option. So we kind of just made it a free for all, really. But obviously, we're tracking the views. So we're pretty pleased with the numbers so far. Before I go, I just wanted to flag up one other piece of news you might be interested in. So we've talked previously about SingleView, which is our attribution solution available through AWIN. We acquired the business a couple of weeks ago. And if you want to read more about how this fits in with our wider, longer term strategy for the channel, then you can read a Q&A with the founder, Mark Kuolo, on our website. Again, easily found on awin.com. If you want to stay in touch with our global news, you can stay up to date, or you can sign up to our Market Insights newsletter from following the details in the show notes. Also, we'll include a link to The Pulse, which is something that Joelle and Jess contribute to. It's our UK specific newsletter from the client partnerships team. But that's all from us for this month. So join us in April for more analysis from the wonderful world of affiliate marketing. So it's bye from Joelle.
Bye.
And bye from Jess.
See you later.
And it's bye from me.